Hello and welcome to episode number 103 of Controller Club, the Friendly Face Gaming Space, a podcast where three friends from three continents share in one love, and that is video games. My name is Kleinfeld, and alongside me today are two of my best friends in the whole wide gaming world. First, coming to us from across the pond, the Nicolas Cage to my Wade Whipple, Tom Drew. Tom, how are you doing? How are things? What's going on?
I didn't expect you to bust that up. That was very impressive. I'm doing good. It's been a pretty busy week this week. Not had a lot of time for gaming, but a lot of time for watching stuff. And we'll get into the stuff that we watched in a little bit. So looking forward to getting into it.
Awesome. Next up, it is everybody's favorite Australian journalist extraordinaire, our very own Chief Pachacamac, Lauren Routes. Lauren, how are you? How's life? What's going on?
I was wondering how I was going to fit into the equation of you two and Knuckles. Yeah. I'm like, am I Maddie? Like, but I'll take Pachacamac. Oh, I can't even say his name.
I'll just let you know, I would invite you guys to my bowling tournaments, my Shabbat dinners, the whole thing.
What an honor.
I'm so grateful. That's amazing.
Yeah. If you're unaware of what we're talking about here on the show today, we are going to be reviewing the Knuckles television TV series. We're going to talk about some potential new info about the Switch 2 and very interesting details that have leaked over the past couple of days. PlayStation's biggest games of all time sales-wise, which is, I think, very interesting looking at this list. But before we get to all of that, I want to ask the two of you, what have we been playing over the last week? Tom, we'll jump right to you because you said you haven't gotten a chance to play a lot of games because you were enjoying Paramount Plus's latest offerings. what's going on? What have you been playing?
Yeah, so I'm continuing my expedition on FF7 Rebirth. I haven't finished it. I said I wanted to finish it this week, but I just haven't gotten to that point yet. I think I'm on chapter 13 now, so I'm pretty close, but I've been doing a lot of side stuff. Klein and I have mentioned it a lot on the podcast over the past few weeks, months. The Queen's Blood minigame in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
So good.
Amazing. I got to the end of it. Like, it's a whole side quest that keeps going, and I've beaten everyone, and I've seen the end of it, and like, there's a final boss sort of thing with it, and like, God, it was really tough. Like, I was surprised, like, how they've still like managed to switch things up. Like, there are so many cards, obviously, so there's so many different strategies that you can kind of take with the game. But Matt, like, genuinely, like, I think you said it before, like, on a past episode, but like, if this could have just been a separate game, this like is an easy game of the year contender, just Queen's Blood on its own. Like, it's so addictive and fun. I wish there's more.
Like, I had a deck for about halfway through the game, and then I realized that, like, oh, no. The way you want to win this is by having those cards that, like, delete your other cards, that, like, to destroy. And once I learned that, it's like, oh, no, I just need to literally just dominate the board. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what cards I'm putting down. I just need to clean up every possible space I can. And then it was like, I thought I had it figured out, and then it just, like, Pandora's box opened. Like, the whole thing changed from there.
Because then you can also replace certain cards, and then that will also open up new opportunities of, like, transferring your power on certain cards to other cards, and that will amplify even more. And it's like, I'm surprised how in-depth they really got with this, like, little mini-game. It's quite impressive. I wonder if they'll, like, do their own separate, like, release for, like, a Queen's Blood on its own, because I'd love to, like, be able to just play with like other players and see. I mean, I'd probably
there
be
was
terrible,
a,
but
what's the game in Witcher called?
A Gwent.
Gwent. There was a Gwent game, right?
Yeah, there
like
was,
on
yeah.
its own separate.
Yeah.
It's been done before. The precedent's there.
Exactly.
Like, it could happen.
Yeah.
Have you played anything else, Tom? Or has it just been Final Fantasy?
Just that. So I've done some more side quests. I went on my date with Tifa, my second one, so that was great. This week, I need to finish the game, because otherwise, I've inching my way towards seeing spoilers now, and I have a feeling I know something's going to happen, and I'm like, I just need to finish it so I can relieve myself of this. But that's what I've been doing.
Lauren, have you gotten up to anything exciting in the last week?
Back home this week, and I've just been playing more of Ghost of Tsushima. I am still in Act 1 because, and maybe you guys can guide me on this, I don't know if it's best to clear out the bottom half of the island before moving on and like rescuing Lord Shimmera, because that's kind of what I'm doing. before I move on, just in case, you know, I know there's more to come. So I don't know if, I mean, I know I can come back, but I just, you know, I don't know what I should be doing. What do you think?
I don't think I did. I'm trying to remember back. I think that when I went and did the platinum, I had quite a bit to do when the game was done. So I think you're fine. I mean, you're only going to benefit yourself the more you do, and mm-hmm. because you'll like level yourself and like have better gear and that sort of thing. But I don't know, Tom, I'm trying to remember like what I did in that game.
I'm pretty like avid and trying to clear as much of the map out as I can as I go on. So I think I did clear it out because as you go up, then more unlocks, obviously. So if you feel the need to do it, I would, but I don't think it's compulsory necessarily. I think you could like continue with the story if that's how you kind of feel at the moment, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So last night I just spent like 2 hours and I didn't do any main quests. I was just like getting fox dens and striking yeah. bamboo and finding spars.
Oh, I love that bamboo mini game is great.
It's so good. Yeah. So yeah, still really, really enjoying it. I think this is a game that's going to like, I'm going to be talking about for probably months to come because it's just so big. Like I'm already 15 hours in and haven't finished yet that lower part of the island yet. So there's a lot more to come.
I've been playing a little bit more Persona, not a lot. I haven't actually sat down at my PlayStation in the last couple of days. But this week I was sitting here at my computer doing work, didn't have a lot of work to do. And I'm like, I need a game. I was playing Dead Cells here. I have Game Pass. So I was looking through the catalog and I realized that I'd never finished Will of the Wisps, the second Ori game. And I played the first one and loved the first one. Like I think the act of moving through that first game and playing as Ori is just, it feels so good. Like you're flipping and double jumping and gliding and using little grappling hook stuff. And then right when I finished the first one, I went right into the second one and it's immediately so much more complicated. You're using so many more buttons all at once and going through these hard platforming challenges. And I think that turned me off and I went away from it. So I restarted it from the beginning. I wasn't super far in it from my last playthrough. Just an amazing game. I'm happy that this team is doing something different with Ain't No Rest for the Wicked or No Rest for the Wicked, which is out in early access right now. It's more like a Diablo style action RPG. But man, I would kill for them to go back and do more platforming because they just like, they've got the sauce. Like they know what they're doing. It's great Metroidvania gameplay and the movement is still awesome. I don't understand how this game looks as good as it does. It looks so like, it looks like art. Like it just looks so painterly. And the new game too looks like absolutely incredible from like a art direction standpoint. But like, I know it's an older game. It came out, I think in 2019 or maybe 2020. But it's, I think just underrated. I hear people talk about that first one a lot, but like this, the second one is just as good, if not better. Just one quick shout out. If you guys haven't played any of these games, it's typical Metroidvania. You like go, you find a ledge or whatever. You're like, I can't get up there. So I need to go to a different place. And then you come back with your double jump or your grappling hook or whatever. And now you can get up there. And then you go and fight bosses. The combat in this game is awesome. I think, Tom, you'd really like it. It's like super Hollow Knight, but you can turn it down. I'm playing on baby-ass baby mode. Like I'm playing super easy so that I can just like, I'm there to enjoy myself. But they do these incredible chase sequences that I haven't really seen a lot of in these kind of games where it is super cinematic and you're usually being chased by like a fire or a boss character. And it's so tense and your heart's beating so fast. And it's never like so cheap that I'm constantly dying, but I'm always inches away from death. And it's just like, it is, I don't know how they do it, but it is so just like thrilling and like invigorating when you're playing this, like this chase sequence. And there's a couple of them that I've gotten through in the second one. I remember in the first one, it being great. And just like that paired with this amazing art direction and the soundtracks are incredible. It's really, really good. And I think they're only, I don't know. I was looking on how long to beat. The second one's like 11 hours. So it's not a super big investment. I think the first one's even shorter, but I'm really like, I would kill for a third Ori game. Like these games are really, really good. Slept on gems for sure.
Yeah, Ori's a game that I have on my Switch that I've just not gotten around to yet.
I'd be interested to see how it plays on Switch.
Yeah,
because
me too.
It does look so good and runs so smooth that if it can, I know Switch sometimes it can be a gong show on there with these sort of ports, but other times it can like it can be magic. And I could see this game, if it was ported correctly, like would be a really special Switch game. But it was ported in, like you need this thing to be smooth and for it to like for it to sing in the way that it does on Xbox or PC the way I'm playing it.
Yeah, like I've heard the port is supposed to be good, so I'm hopeful. I guess I'll report back when I get to it, because I think I will play it at least within the next couple months to get, like get rid of some of my backlog on my Switch before the next one comes out, the next Switch comes out. Yeah, you're talking about it makes me want to play it. So
they do a really great job in, I remember it in this first one, and in this one is happening again, of telling a great story without any voiced characters, and making you like so incredibly emotional, just like just tearing your heart out. The first 5 minutes of this game, you're like, oh my gosh, I am broken. I am a husk of a human being. And then they make you happy again, and then they tear your heart out. And it's just, Moon Studios. I'm excited to give No Rest for a Wicked a try, because I think that I'll do anything. I'll play anything that they do, because they are wizards over there. But that's what we've been playing. Let's get into the news with the news we choose. Tom Drew, give us that news jingle.
It's the news we choose. Yeah.
We'll start with me because mine is a little lighter and I have a little bit of a game that we're going to play once I get through the news story. Okay, so this is coming from Grant Taylor Hill at Insider Gaming. That a leaked all-time PlayStation download numbers list has been revealed. This is coming over on Reset Era. You can find the full list in the table and everything. I've pulled a bunch of the story. I've taken out some data points because that will play into the question I have for the two of you at the end of this. In a recent leak, which is associated with last year's mega leak from Insomniac Games, it seems as though digital download data from PlayStation's PSN platform has surfaced, stretching back to the origins of the Surface. In this data, we get an in-depth look at data as of midway through 2023 that reveals the financial revenue and total download numbers of every first-party title ever released on the PlayStation Network. So this is only first-party titles. In the documents, which were posted recently on Reset Era, we get an in-depth behind-the-scenes look at the PSN's financial performance stretching back to when the service first began, more or less. In an expansive spreadsheet, we can trawl through the numbers, identifying exactly how many copies of any specific first-party game were bought and downloaded digitally. In the article, this is when they get into the highest-grossing, the most sales on the service. I've pulled those out because I'm going to ask you about those in a second. But this is really interesting. There are more than 500 games featured on the list, which includes PlayStation Classics titles and handheld games. At the very opposite end of the spectrum, so the least selling games on this list, sits the PlayStation Classic Dual Pack of Medieval / Siphon Filter, which made just $60 life to date. So total. And was downloaded a total of 10 times. It is one of the most comprehensive breakdowns of digital download data we've ever seen. In total, the document tallies up a revenue count worth $4 billion with 171 million downloads. So I wanted to ask the two of you, this full list has been published online. You can go look. I was looking through it. It is fascinating. I want to see if the two of you can guess the top 5 all-time first-party titles in the PSN's lifetime.
Okay,
I'm gonna lock in Buzz Quiz Party. Is that a?
Think? Do you want? I can give you the two that they mention in the article very quickly, if that will help you, and then you guys can fill in the other three. So the two that they mention in the article. The biggest selling PlayStation game of all time, first party, is Spider-Man on PlayStation 4, netting $315 million in revenue and topping off at $8.3 million downloads. The document reveals also that coming in at number 3 is The Last of Us Part 2 as of mid-2023. and it had secured a lifetime to date revenue of 242 million and 6.3 million digital downloads. So that is the number one, which is Spider-Man, and the number three, which is Last of Us Part Three. We are missing number two, number four, and number five.
Okay, well, I feel like one of them has to be God of War.
Which one? Which God of War?
Oh,
I think the first one?
Yeah.
The first one is number five.
Okay.
So we are missing number two and number four.
Do you reckon The Last of Us is one of them? Like, I mean,
well, they are both PlayStation 5 games.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Guess because a lot of people started doing more digital stuff more recently.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
They are also both cross-generational games.
Mm.
PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5.
So I think Ragnarok's the other is going to be one.
That's number two. Okay. That is the second best-selling PlayStation game of all time. Or first party digitally.
What's that Souls game?
Demon Souls?
Yeah. That was popular. No? Okay.
It was popular, but it's not. That is just PS5. Demon Souls isn't even on here. The highest charting Souls game is Bloodborne at number 14.
Mm.
Okay. Maybe like Miles Morales?
Ding, ding, ding. Really? There it is. The top five are Spider-Man, God of War Ragnarok, crazy. Last of Us Part II, Spider-Man Miles Morales, and God of War 2014. God of War 2018. Sorry, PS4. That is it. Ghost of Tsushima, number six. First Horizon, wow. Number seven. Horizon Forbidden West, number eight. Number nine, Gran Turismo 7. And number 10, rounding out the top 10, the original release. No, not the original release. The remastered release of The Last of Us Part 1, The Last of Us Remastered for PS4.
That does kind of make sense now. Like, I was thinking, like, Miles Morales, like, that. I mean, it was a, you know, it was a big game, but it was, like, it's a mid-sized game in terms of, in comparison, like, Spider-Man stuff. But I guess it was, like, a launch title with the PS5. Yeah. So
it was a launch title, and the name Spider-Man, that tells you a lot. I mean, it is surprising to me that Spider-Man 2 isn't super high on here, but this is as of mid-2023. So this is before Spider-Man 2. We don't know what Spider-Man 2 did in terms of this list. It could be a number one. We have no idea. This is as of mid-2023, but it's Spider-Man. I mean, if anything, if you're going to take anything away from this data, it is simply that, like, the big Sony still is in the business of big franchise. You look at that top 10, it is all Spider-Man, all God of War, all Last of Us, a Gran Turismo, and the two Horizon games. Mm-hmm. Like, that is pretty remarkable. There is no one-off titles in there. There is no, like, I don't know, Days Gone doesn't show up. Days Gone very close to the top 10. I think it's like 11 or 12, but they are still in the business of this AAA, like, prestige names. And yeah, Spider-Man's the top of that list because there's not many bigger IPs in the world of pop culture than the name Spider-Man. But I don't know. What'd you guys think about this data getting out there and just the data itself overall?
I think it's interesting because, yeah, like you said, a lot of these are PS4 and PS5, like, cross-platform games. So I would just be interested at this point to see how, yeah, like, a Spider-Man 2 compared, like, just a PS5 title in terms of sales and, like, how much they have to rely on the kind of past player base to kind of boost their sales and stuff like that. Because, yeah, I mean, that, like, clearly it makes a massive difference in terms of how much these have shot up. So, yeah, it's just fascinating.
It is amazing that the list is as extensive as it is.
I'd be interested to know, like, how the list would change when you include third-party games. And because I'm like, I don't know how many of these would stay on the list if that was the case. Like, GTA is probably number one, followed by, like, I don't know, maybe some of the sports games. So, yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, it sounds like, oh, yeah, they're really, like, still in this big AAA franchise business, which they are. But it's like, of course, those are going to be the biggest things. They have the biggest teams. They have the biggest money behind them. They have the biggest marketing push. So it would be interesting if there was, like, a smaller, maybe, like, indie game up there, because that would have been a huge achievement. But I think it's, like, not wholly unsurprising to see that these are the things that are up there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can go find, like, it is not just, they say it's a list that features 500 titles, and in my head, I was, I don't know, naively thinking, what does that actually look like? It's, you can go and find the ranking of all of them in order and, like, just scroll through, and it's like, wait, Little Big Planet 3 made this much money digitally versus Little Big Planet 2, and, like, it's just, it is, it, as they say in the article, like, the biggest, I would say, financial leak, like, that we've really ever seen, like, the most extensive, at least, you can go and look at everything, that every first party title that they've put out since the PSN started. And as it says in the article, that Medieval Siphon Filtered dual pack is the lowest, which selling, like, how do you, that seems crazy that something on a platform as big as the PlayStation community could sell 10 copies. I don't care what the game is. Like, that just seems, that seems bonkers. That seems wild. But I don't know. I thought that was fun. Do you guys have anything else to say, or should we move on?
Well, I jokingly said that Buzz Quiz Party, like, made, would have made the top five, but I'd literally just scroll through quickly, and Buzz Master Quiz is at 389. So beat Medieval Siphon Filter Duopack, which is surprising. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is funny looking at some of these, like, way, way, way down the list when you're getting into, like, some of these Vita games, or, like, yeah. I'm seeing, like, PSP Dual Pack, MotorStorm, Arctic Edge, Twisted Metal Head On. Like, these are so, such niche titles. And, like, I definitely had, like, I had the Sly Cooper collection on Vita. I can't imagine that that game sold a ton. I mean, because it's on the PlayStation Vita. like, I had the, I guess it was also the Ratchet and Clank Vita collection, and you couldn't find that anywhere because they just didn't sell them. And so it is quite wild to look at this list and look all the way down and see where some of your favorite games. Maybe I should look for Mod Nation Racers. I want to see where
yeah,
where does it stack up in the pantheon? Tom, let's go right into your news story.
Yeah, so I'm talking a bit about some Switch 2 details. So new rumors acquired by Spanish gaming site Vandal may have provided even more details about the Nintendo Switch 2. Via Tom Ivan at VGC, the site claims that the Switch 2 will include all new Joy-Con controllers that will be attached to the device magnetically, as opposed to the click-into-place method that the current Joy-Con use. It's unclear whether the old models of Joy-Cons will be compatible with the new Switch, even if it is just through wireless play rather than actually attaching them to the Switch. But it is said that the current Nintendo Switch Pro controllers will still work on the new hardware. This adds to the growing number of tweaks that the Switch 2's hardware including a model as a whole that will opt for an LCD screen like the initial Switch did, rather than the OLED one, which was a later model that they released for the initial Switch. And that's just to keep costs down, according to certain reports. So I'm just curious, like, what do you guys feel about, like, new controllers for this, I guess, but more in terms of, like, what do we think about, like, just in general, like, certain consoles retaining certain pieces of hardware, like, moving forward, like controllers, and keeping those within the ecosystem versus the mode of, like, just getting rid of stuff entirely. We saw this with, like, the Wii U kept the Wii Remote controllers around. That didn't work out so well for them necessarily, some would say. But how do we feel about this in general? Lauren, what do you think?
I think yes, in certain cases, like a Switch Pro controller, if you're not going to come out with anything that's kind of like a better advancement, that the Switch Pro controller is already really, really good. So I like the idea that I can just keep using that on the new Switch. And yeah, particularly like people spend a lot of money on Joy-Cons, probably because of Joy-Con drift. So I think it makes sense if you're allowed to be able to use those with your new console. I am interested though, like I'm trying to figure out like how much of this new Switch is actually going to be new. Like they came out with the OLED model and it was like obviously a few minor enhancements. Like you're not going to upgrade to an OLED model if you've already got a Switch. Like there's not really like enough value in that. But having as someone who has an OLED Switch, the screen is like a million times better. So I'm concerned when they say that like maybe that's not going to be on the Switch 2 because it's like wouldn't you want it to have packed the biggest punch when it comes out instead of just being like oh no we're going to go for like affordability instead of instead of like the best kind of hardware. Like, I think it would be good if they released another like Switch. What are the small ones called?
Oh, Switch Lite.
Lite. Yeah, do one of those kind of models, because that's for a completely different kind of market and use case. But I think the next Switch needs to be like a significant upgrade. Otherwise, we're going to be looking at like just another OLED model that's like, what's the point?
Yeah, I do worry. Like, I'm in two minds with this. Like, on one level, like, it is nice because, like, me, I have quite a lot of Joy-Cons because I like having the ability to, you know, like, have people over and play multiplayer games. So if I can't use them now, it's like, oh no, I just have a bunch of Joy-Cons that I can't really use that much anymore. But at the same time, you know, if the new Switch is only so much of a jump, we're in the same sort of situation with the Wii U, where it's like, consumers are just going to be like, well, what is the point of me getting a new Switch? I already have this one that works perfectly fine. And this doesn't seem like too much of a jump in terms of, the screen might be a bit better. Maybe the it runs a bit better, but, you know, what is the incentive? So I guess it is down to like how they market this. Personally, I would like it to be, like you said, Lauren, kind of the best of the best, because, yeah, we have been running on this for 7 years. So if it isn't that much of a big of a jump, then we waited a long time for this. So it just seems a bit weird. But Klein, what do you think about this?
I think that it makes sense. The controller wise, the Pro controller of it all does make sense to me. I think that the Switch Pro controller is great. It's an upgrade from the Wii U Pro controller, which I think was a decent controller on its own. I love the haptics in the like the HD Rumble. Mm-hmm. In the Pro controller, and the HD Rumble and the Joy-Cons as well. The battery life on the Pro controller is like, it is ungodly in this. compared to a DualSense, like, it runs laps around the PlayStation controller, which is wild. They're doing a lot of the same things, not all of the same things, but they both have the HD Rumble in them. Yeah, the PlayStation 5 controller has the adaptive triggers and stuff like that. But as for like what this actually means for what the Switch 2 is going to be, I want it to feel like an upgrade. I want it to feel like a next generation Switch. I think that that is still going to be the case. I think that technologically this is going to be a leap. I don't think that we're going to be playing as much as I would love to be playing the new Mario game in 4K at 60 frames per second. Like, my PlayStation 5 can't even do that right now. I think that it is still going to be behind these new consoles, but we are so far behind with the original Switch technologically. That's not to say that it's not releasing great games. I mean, we're getting Thousand Year Door still. We've had like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom both run on that thing, which seems crazy to me. But I just want it to be capable of doing things. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm compromising playing my Switch. And I hope we still get that. I'm interested to see, it's funny, the magnetic thing instead of clipping the Joy-Cons on. I'm interested to see what that actually looks like, because the thing I like about the Switch is you slide the Joy-Cons on and they're locked in. Like, they are there and they are not letting go. To me, a magnetic solution, wouldn't it be super easy to like pull them off, like bend them off? It that feels like it could make the whole thing feel quite flimsy, whether it is or not. And I don't know. I want to see what this thing is, and we're getting ever closer to it. I thought that maybe we would have heard about it sometime earlier this year, but we haven't gotten a direct yet. Like, we've gotten these partner showcases and the indie showcase, but we have not gotten a full scale direct. So I think that they're holding it for like the summertime, when it is Game Fest time and when Nintendo usually does their big quote unquote E3, but without E3, Nintendo Direct. I'm done with these rumors at this point. I'm done with the speculation. I just want to see the thing, because it seems that people, they have them in their hands. I saw something the other day where it was like, third parties are currently working with them, but have not seen them.
Yeah, I think they may have.
What is that?
Oh, like
what?
Dev kits.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But would you not have to have like the correct Joy-Cons in hand and like stuff like that? If that's the case, if that isn't the case, then I do think it is going to feel like a Wii U solution where it's like, oh no, this is just this is just Switch Plus or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to do better than the Wii U, because I think you put Switch on anything and people are like, the Switch name is prints money right now at this point. But I want to see it. I want to see it so bad.
Yeah. It's interesting you said about the magnetic Joy-Cons, because yeah, like the,
how's that work?
The clicking thing, like that's never been an issue for me in terms of how the Joy-Con work. Like it is the drift at the end of the day that's the issue. Maybe you can use your Joy-Con to magnetically call your Switch across the room, like Mjolnir sort of thing.
I like that'd the force. Kind
of yeah, that'd be kind of sick. Maybe that's what they have in mind. Can you imagine if they did that, like, on stage? Like, Miyamoto comes out.
The Switch, the little screen, just like a Frisbee, just slot.
That would be a flex. Like, if we could do anything,
you think
like,
people throwing Wii remotes to the TV were hazards? Let me tell you what. We're going to start throwing these screens across the room. Little Sally's going to walk in the living room and get beamed in the forehead by this little LCD screen.
Give it to me.
Maybe that's why they're doing LCD and not OLED, because OLED you notoriously shouldn't move around too much, because the organic matter in it gets all messed up. They're doing LCD so they can frisbee it across the room with magnets.
Look, if they haven't implemented this yet, then I say they have this idea for free now.
You know what? If they haven't, you've already delayed it out of this fall into next year, push it another year, whatever it takes.
Oh, man.
Oh boy. Okay, that is the news we choose. Tom, Drew, give us the outro and let's get into Knuckles.
It's the news we choose. Yeah.
Buckle up, my fellow Echidna warriors. We are here. Knuckles is here on Paramount Plus, and we have a review for you. Let's start out with a little bit of an intro. If you don't know, this past week, the release of Knuckles happened on Paramount Plus. This marks the first major spinoff of Paramount's Sonic the Hedgehog movie universe, centering on Idris Elba's Knuckles the Echidna, as he continues to learn the ins and outs of humanity after first appearing in Sonic the Hedgehog 2, not last year, right? 2022. That movie's 2 years old now. Okay. Mm-hmm. I could have sworn it came out last year, but last year was Mario.
Yeah.
The series, I kid you not, I was trying to explain the plot to Gabrielle yesterday. And it's a fever dream, folks. It follows Knuckles as he takes the human Wade Whipple, played by Adam Pauly, who is in the movies, right? Minor character.
Yep.
Deputy Sheriff, an aspiring bowler and Deputy Sheriff of Green Hills, Montana, takes him under his wing to teach him what it takes to be a warrior. In that, we learn all about Wade Whipple's family. He's got a lineage of bowlers. We meet his father. We have Shabbat dinner. There's villains. It's a whole thing. Thus far, Knuckles has received mixed reviews, to say the least. It currently sits at a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes, with critics saying the series lacks the charm of the first two Sonic films and is tonally inconsistent. We have watched it, 6 episodes long, a nice brisk. You know what? If I'm going to say one nice thing about the show here today, nice 3-hour, just uninterrupted, you can sit down, bag it out in an afternoon.
It was over quickly.
Put it on the box. Lauren Rouse, what did you think of the Knuckles Paramount Plus TV show?
Oh, I can't believe I watched all of this.
As the resident Sonic fan, I would just like to say thank you guys. Thank you for doing this for me.
Here's the thing. And the makers of Knuckles could not have known this, but I'm currently in my 6th rewatch of Arcane right now. And then I had to pause it to put on Knuckles. And let me tell you, the disparity between those two shows is very clear. In all seriousness, I don't think this is a terrible show. I think it is doing more of what the Sonic movies are doing. And at the end of the day, those movies are for children. So this series was just aggressively not made for me. And I would have known within the first episode that it wasn't going to be for me. So I probably wouldn't persevere, but I did. So look, just because it's not made for me, that's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean that it's bad, but I think it's like kind of just quite boring for anyone over the age of 10.
Tom Drew, we'll go to you next. You have a history with Sonic, a little bit, not an extensive history, but I would say you're a casual Sonic fan.
Yeah.
What did you think about Knuckles, Tom?
Yeah. So, I've of the three of us, I'd say I'm the most down on the Sonic movies. So I had certain expectations going into this. And, you know, we do like to keep it positive on the show in general, but man, I hated this. I hated this so much. I watched this. So my friend came over, friend of the show, Revan. He came over this weekend and we did some other stuff as well. And he said, oh, so what are you doing for the rest of the weekend? And I was like, well, I got to watch this Knuckles show for my podcast. And I said, oh yeah, I'll watch it with you. Complete mistake for him. Because we just ripped into this thing.
I would have enjoyed it more having someone else in the room, honestly.
Yeah. If not for him, because he has no, I mean, he's seen, like, he was telling me how he's seen Sonic Underground and certain things like that. But if, like, he had no kind of connection to this. So watching it through his kind of eyes was just baffling. I just think this show is inexcusable. I think it is embarrassingly bad. And I will never say this ever again, but Sonic fans deserve better. They deserve better than this. Like,
yeah, okay.
Come on. But anyway, we'll get into it and why I don't like it in a bit.
Okay. Well, jump to me. I am the resident Sonic fan. Sonic and me go back to the for years, you know. That 7-year-old playing Sonic 2 in the basement never left my brain. And I have to say that I did not enjoy really any of Knuckles. It felt like a bad joke was being played mm-hmm. on me about the whole time. I've enjoyed the first two Sonic movies. I think the first one is fine. I think the second one is better. And the reason the second one is better is because they learned and they were like, you know what? We're going to focus less on the humans interacting with Sonic and more on Sonic doing Sonic things. And this show throws all of that out the window. And it's like, you know what? This is a show about an aspiring bowler who happens to be hanging out with a Sonic character. It is not about a Sonic character hanging out with a bowler. It's the other way around. It was in a way that, like, there's certain comedy for me. I will say that by the end of this, I wasn't like on the floor crying. It ended. I went about my day. There were moments where I was like, am I starting to enjoy this? It was like a bad joke that at the start is like, oh, that's really bad and funny. And then it comes back and you're like, no, that's just bad. And then I started to come around on it again by the end of the show where I'm like, I wouldn't recommend this to anyone, but did I enjoy it? I don't think I did. There were bits of it that Gabby's laughing in the kitchen across the room at me trying to walk myself through this. I think there were bits of it. There were elements that I liked. I think that Idris Elba as Knuckles is great. I think that he is a great casting for that character. Everything they have him do in this show and everything that happens around him, I could not care less about. He does get a hat and a motorcycle at the end. I think that's pretty cool. But there's just, we'll get right into the spoilery stuff now because there's just so much to go over. I do want to start on some good because I think that there is some good here. My biggest complaint about the Mario movie last year was the licensed music. I actually liked the licensed music, and I thought the licensed music moments in this series were done okay. We get way too much of Patti Smith's The Warrior, like just way too much. It's in the first episode 3 times, and then it's the theme song for every other episode, and then we get the post-credit scene at the end of the show where I think this is my jam, which is...
There was a post-credit scene. Okay, but I didn't stay for that.
There was. Lauren, okay. Let me explain this for you, okay? So we fight the robots in Reno, which just, why, what, who, what's going on? We fight them, we win, woohoo, saves the day, the power of the heart. Cut to credits. Come back. It's sunset. Wade Whipple has gotten off the motorcycle and is now riding behind Knuckles. So he's got a funny hat, a helmet on that's really funny. He's got flames on it. I think a juice container going down into it. And Knuckles is wearing the cowboy hat and they're riding. And Wade Whipple pulls out, it's Wade who does it, right, Tom? Who pulls out an MP3 player. Mm-hmm. And Knuckles goes, oh. And Wade goes, yeah, it's Wade Jammers plus Knuckles. And Knuckles is like, oh, okay. And they put in the song, they put it into play, and the warrior starts playing. And Knuckles goes, oh, I think this is my jam. And then it ends. And they ride off into the sunset. But yeah, I think the music is okay in this show. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. for me.
Did you not like the Wunner fight during the Shabbat dinner to I forget what song the song it is, but it's like a traditional like Hebrew song that's playing and it's spinning around the kitchen and the mom's fighting with them. This show's wild, guys.
I thought it was really lame. I thought the first thing on the warrior, because it is used a lot, it made me remember another show that uses that song very prominently, Glow, which is a Netflix show. And that was the theme song of that show. And it just reminded me of how that show was cancelled and we never got any more of that. And I'm like, we got Knuckles and we couldn't get more of Glow. For the licensed music, I don't know. It felt like it was playing all the stuff that like, it was all the,
it was
like,
playing
expected.
All the time. They spent so much money on this soundtrack.
Yeah, for what? And they play Holding Out for a Hero, which is also in the Mario movie, and it's also in a billion movies last year. I was going crazy.
I clocked in the first minute. This happens in the first minute, 45 seconds of episode one. We go from the warrior directly into Madness's Our House. And then it's like a 2 or 3 second break, and we get Can I Kick It by Tribe Called Quest. Like, it's just like right there. Three licensed songs, you just blew through them in under 2 minutes.
Yeah, they couldn't afford more CGI for the Knuckles, but they could spend it on the music budget.
I thought he looked fine. Did you not like the look of Knuckles himself?
Okay.
Everything, some of the other effects bugged me. I thought he looked good.
There are some, and there are a lot of the time he looks like the movie. Which is, you know, your mileage may vary. But there are some shots I noticed, I think, like, as the series went on, where it did look a little bit ropey, at least for me. Like, his model just, like, looked a bit strange. But, like, I think my problem with the visuals are just, like, we're supposed to be talking about positives. Like, the visuals for me.
This is the kind of review this is going to be.
Yeah, this is going to be
free. Like, we're ping-ponging around. So.
But, yeah, the visuals for me, like, nothing looked real unless you were in a bowling alley. Nothing looked real. Like when they get to Reno, so for context, this show was filmed in London, and Sonic 3 was also filmed in London.
It was,
yeah. Oh, because I know, I knew, well, my I don't want to out people, but I know some people, I know the people who worked on the show. Basically, yeah, like, and I feel like you can tell that a lot of it was green screen. Like, a lot of the car shots are green screened. A lot of when they get to Reno, it's, you just see the street. There's no one walking around, and it's like an empty place.
Like a video game.
Yeah, like there's no NPCs anywhere.
Batman Arkham Knight. There's just no one. There's just no one there.
You know, maybe they took inspiration from that. But yeah, then as soon as they get there, they just go into the bowling tournament place. So it's like, yeah,
mean the American Bowling Arena?
Is that an actual place? Is that why it's...
No.
Okay.
Reno as well? Is that a real place?
Yeah, Reno, I think, is like right on the California-Nevada border. Okay. So it's like a lesser,
because it's like mini
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of places in America, you can't gamble. And so there's all these cities and pockets of Nevada where you can gamble, that it's like the second you reach Nevada borderline, it's like just, there's these little tiny Las Vegases.
Oh, okay, there we go. That was more interesting than the show.
Wow. Lauren, what did you think? We're on the topic of visuals here. Do you think, are you with Tom, that Knuckles himself didn't like, what did you think about the visual stylings of this show?
I didn't really have a problem with it. I felt it was just like a straight translation of the movie. I think Knuckles is the best part of this show. It's called Knuckles for a reason. Anytime he's on screen, anytime Idris Elba's performance is coming through, I thought it was fine.
And I thought him saying this dumb lines worked. But everyone else saying some of the dumb lines sucked. Like Idris Elba out loud saying, I only eat grapes and Cool Ranch Doritos is stupid, is really dumb. But I laughed. And that's one of the only times I did laugh.
Yeah, I think like part of the movie that was great is like, yeah, the Sonic characters. And I think Knuckles was a really great addition to like Sonic 2, the movie. But like you say, they just like decided to make the show not about him. It was all about Wade, who like no one cares about. Why would we watch a show called Knuckles to learn about this side character sheriff guy who has like maybe one one-liner like in the movie, but I did not need to know Wade Whipple's life story. I would have rather learned about Knuckles's life story back on the Echidna world and stuff like that. But it seems very clear to me that they were like, to make this the way we did, like the movies, there needs to be a lot of time that isn't using Knuckles because he's an expensive CGI creation. And so then it had to focus like hugely on the human part. The part that was so clear to me when this happened was episode, I think it's episode 4, whatever the musical sequence is, where he is turning into Knuckles.
I liked it.
No. I'm sorry,
I didn't like it. It's a shame because it's directed by John Mazzacone, who's part of The Lonely Island. And I really like The Lonely Island, but I thought it was so annoying.
I'm like, it's so clear that you're using Wade as a stand-in for Knuckles here to like tell his story instead of actually going and making it look cool. It was just like, it was like the cheap way out.
But you got it via rock opera, guys.
But a bad one.
There are so many choices in this show that just like absolutely baffle me. And I think episode 4, which I'll just want to point out right now, in IGN's review of this show, they did individual episode scores. They gave episode 4 a 9. A 9 out of 10.
That's crazy.
Reviewer did, not IGN. I liked episode 4. I thought it was fun. I liked the musical stylings of whatever that was. However, do I want it in my Knuckles TV show? Not necessarily. No, I don't. But that's what I got. It's kind of like how I feel about being like a DC fan and the Snyder movies were happening. And it's like, this isn't what I would have done, but it's what I've got. So I'm going to enjoy parts of what I have. I thought it was fine. There are some really weird, like, I think the writing in this show is felt like it was written by a 12 or 13 year old in drama class. There were lines. I don't understand some of like where some of this humor was, because there is some things that are very distinctly adult. Mm-hmm. And then there are other things where it's like, but you're gearing the rest of the war like show towards 7 year old kids. And I don't know who the show is for because of that. It's jarring. You have like jokes about the suffering of the Jewish people, and then you also have the sister of Wade Whipple sitting on a couch reading a book titled How to Not Get Caught Off Guard as people are breaking into the house behind her. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand. There's a fight scene that ends where Wade Whipple just squeezes sriracha at someone and goes, "Sriracha!" And like, that's it. Like, that's the joke. I'm baffled by it. I really am.
I just think in terms of, like you said, about like, who is this for? Like, and you know, it isn't even
it should
right
be
thing.
For me. Like, I should be sitting here going, yeah, but like, and there were callouts to Sonic lore. Like, there was stuff where it's like, oh, we're talking about the owls. Oh, Chief Pachacamac. Like, that's a deep cut. And it just, they just throw it out. It's there. And then it doesn't matter.
The thing is, like, the whole concept of the show is like, it doesn't, I don't know who it's for, because like, if you're a kid watching this, you're going in for Knuckles. And then it's just about a guy who wants to do bowling, and then when he is doing the bowling, Knuckles isn't even in the crowd supporting his friend. He's like at the bar, like watching.
He's been
TV.
Captured by Kid Cudi.
Exactly. And the whole like structure of the show as well. Like, oh, Knuckles gets captured. Oh, now Wade is captured now, and it's like, what are we doing here? This is just all over the place. It's such a weird tonally. I don't know what it's trying to do at all.
I would have much rather it been Knuckles ingratiating himself with, like, learning about humanity more, which I think could have been fun. Like, in the first episode, in the first few minutes, he has this conversation where he's sitting there talking to a golden retriever, and like, it's kind of funny. And I'm like, oh, where was this? Like, why didn't we get more of this? Instead, it's Wade Whipple's bowling party for 6 episodes.
Yeah, I actually think the first episode was quite solid. I know that's the one with, like, you know, Maddie and Knuckles and Sonic in it. They do appear very briefly, but I really liked seeing Knuckles kind of like try to adjust to being in that family. Even though, like, the whole setup of Sonic is weird, that they're all like these people's kids. Okay. So I agree. I think it would have been better to focus more of that. Clearly it was, again, like just a budgetary issue where they're like, no, we need to have a human story in this. And then that just took over. But I think thematically the show did pretty well. It was like all about Knuckles needing to find an apprentice to train a warrior because he's now, I don't know, like the last of his kind and wants an apprentice. And, you know, kind of by the end, I did see like the structure was quite good in that like he had learned from Wade, Wade had learned from him. It was all nice and wholesome and stuff. I hate that cheesy stuff, but I accept that it is a part of kids' movies. That's just
the
how
power's
it is.
In the heart. It's yeah. not in the knuckles.
I hate
the
that. But, you know, I do recognize that's part of the age group. It's fine. That's what needs to be done. So, yeah, there were elements that they did well. I don't understand why people are maybe so high on this. I guess it is because they're taking it with the spirit that it's intended, which is for a younger demographic. And in that case, you can look at it and be like, it's probably fine. Kids probably watch this and have a good time, like laugh at the jokes that we don't think are funny and stuff like that. It's just not doing a thing that a lot of those like children's series do where it's like it can speak to both adults and children. This is only speaking to one of them. So that's probably why like we're pretty harsh on it, because it just wasn't for us.
But I think that like Sonic 2 particularly did a great job of maybe not providing, there was some like adult humor. I think all the wedding stuff in Sonic 2 was quite funny as an adult, but they did a great job of like scratching that Sonic fan itch in my brain. Like there's moments in that genuinely felt like, oh, like I will put up with the rest of this silliness because the final battle is like everything I've ever wanted to see on screen as a Sonic fan. And Shadow's going to show up at the very end. Whereas this had like little tiny moments of that at the very beginning of the first episode. You get him running past a sign that spins. That's like an iconic Sonic thing. He does the full like Sonic or Knuckles flying pose, which is like an iconic Knuckles thing. But it wasn't enough for me to forgive the rest of it, because the rest of it was just so like bizarre. Like that is the word I would use to describe this show, is like, I don't know who it's for. It seems so, I guess like it's a kid's show, but it is also kind of, it feels like it's playing on what a kid's show could be. And like, maybe it is for someone who's a little more mature. And I don't like, I have no idea who's searching this out and who's watching it.
Yeah. It has a lot of budget for just being a kid's show, quote unquote.
I just don't understand. Like, I mean, yeah, it really does all come down to budget at the end of the day, which is a shame. But like, even down to like the villain, I don't even know. Like, I can't even tell you what his name was. Like, who was
the Buyer?
The Hound from Game of Thrones.
His name is literally the Buyer, because what was he going to do? He was going to buy the quills from Kid Cudi and that other lady.
And it's just like, I have no investment. There's like, it's crazy because like they have some scenes with him. And they talk to Kid Cudi and the other woman. I can't remember her name. I'm sorry.
She was in the movies, right?
I don't know if she's in the
movie. Oh, is she?
I think so.
Maybe. Remember.
He isn't. It's funny because Kid Cudi wrote the song that plays during the credits at the end of Sonic 2, and now he's in the show.
That's crazy. They really don't do anything to kind of like connect this villain to Knuckles, other than the fact that he wants his quills or whatever. There's no like stakes. Like he shows up and then Knuckles is like, I'm gonna
beat
him
in and out, which bugs me. Like they're not there the whole time. You forget that they're even there, and then all of a sudden you're in Reno fighting a giant robot.
Yeah.
what is going on?
I did literally forget that he was there, and then he came in like the very last episode. I was like, oh, I forgot about you. Like,
yeah,
I guess you have to come back.
Because they spend a whole, you know, montage of like a bowling sequence or whatever of the tournament, and you get into this like illusion haze of like, oh my god, I'm watching this tournament, and I'm like, wait, what am I doing? This is supposed to be a Knuckles show. What are we doing here? And I just feel like the way they've kind of paced this whole thing, It's just all over the place. Like, I really don't. it really confounds me, like, how they've constructed this whole thing. Even down to, like, the. Because we do get a bit of, like, Knuckles's backstory via Wade through that.
Owls. They killed all the rest of his tribe, yeah, you see.
Through the musical sequence thing. But yeah, I know you liked it, Klein. But I think like the
I know you liked it, but you shouldn't.
You should, but it sucked. But it, like, it just kept reminding me of like what they aren't able to do. I think like my biggest issue with this whole thing is like, and just the Sonic movies in general. I think like they have so much that they can draw from. There's so much source material. And they just don't use it. Like, and I don't know why. I mean, aside from budget, if you put that aside, like, why can't we make this, like... And it's wild, too, because this is... You know, this is essentially the length of a movie. Like, if you put it all together, the runtime is, like, a bit over 2 hours, I'd say. So, like, why can't we just... I would have preferred, you know, like, maybe a one-hour one-shot with Knuckles, and they could have done... Introduce a different character, like, I don't know, like Silver or Espio or, like, the crocodile guy. Like, just bring in
Big
someone
else.
Big the cat.
Bring him. We need him.
I would have preferred to watch an hour of Knuckles and Big just fishing for an hour.
Just hanging out.
But we got this instead.
I really cannot wait one day in the Sonic films when Lauren Rouse has to sit there and be introduced to Big the Cat for the very first time. Because that just, I want to be there.
When does Sonic 3 come out?
December. I hope Big the Cat is in it.
All right, Klein, we can go.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's confounding. I have one of the notes written down is like, especially when you're going to focus on, yeah, the rest of the human characters kind of suck. Or not kind of. They're pretty bad. I don't like the sister. The mom has her moment. She's okay. This bounty hunter guy with the luscious hair, like, what is going on? Who is this man? But I have written down Wade Whipple might be the most unlikable TV protagonist I've ever seen. just full stop. I don't have a ton of history with Adam Pauly, I guess. I didn't even remember him from the movies. I cannot stand Wade Whipple as a human being. And when you're focusing, especially in a Knuckles show where Knuckles is barely even in it, you're focusing so much more on him. I felt sick to my stomach. I'm like, this is awful. This is bad. He's waving to the guy across the street and there's a hole in the wall. I can't.
I just check out like mentally anytime he's on screen, which is the whole show basically. Like, yeah, his jokes aren't funny. He's really not like got a lot going on. He has this whole thing with his dad and it just felt
who's played really... by Cary Elwes. It just,
yeah.
shows up. Princess Bride. Shout out. Yeah.
But I just like that whole, it's crazy because like, yeah, everything they do with him is so generic and like cliched. There's nothing like interesting going on with Wade, like at all.
Like, why bowling of all things? He is a cop. You could have had an interesting crime that they're solving. Like Knuckles and Wade solve a crime.
Because he's a dweeb.
But it's bowling,
I don't know.
Of all things. It baffles me.
The crazy thing to me is that, okay, we're going to make this thing bowling. We're going to make his whole thing bowling. And, you know, his whole arc is that he's going to use bowling to defeat the bad guy.
The warrior of the bowling alley.
They even set up that Knuckles is really good at bowling and he can turn himself into a ball and get a strike. No, at no point does he pick up Knuckles and throw him at the bat. Like, it feels like screenwriting 101. Like,
Wade Whipple rolls the ball down the lane, hits everything but one pin at that very last moment, and you're like, oh no, he tied with his dad, and it wiggles and it wiggles, and I'm like, Knuckles is going to come in and like slam on the something. No, he's not involved in this at all. It's just it just falls over. They won. Great job. You did it. You beat Cary Elwes. Awesome. And his bowling partner's this Girl Scout. And...
What was that about? What was the joke there? Yeah.
Can I ask, can Knuckles actually fly?
He can glide.
Okay.
He can glide like that. He sticks his arms straight out in the games and he blows around. There's like a lot of levels in the games where as Knuckles, you like do a lot of like climbing on the Knuckles. and then gliding, or there's like wind blowing and you'll use the glide to like glide in the wind, for lack of a better term, grabbing onto like poles to hang on to as you're going and stuff. Yeah. So that's from the games, but it also is surrounded by like a literal, we're in 2024, a Paul Blart reference. So it's like there's they play the games, like there's stuff there, but it's like, what are we doing? What? Like, you're in Reno, this is a classy place, Kevin James is here, you mean the mall cop? Yeah, I do. Like,
yeah,
what?
My friend Revan even like, he said like, oh, this kind of reminds me of Paul Blart Mall Cop, and then they made that reference, and
that's,
I was like,
a reference,
oh my
that
God.
A seven, like a kid wouldn't get now.
That's right.
Yeah. Right, like Paul Blart's, I don't know, I'm probably speaking out of turn here, but like 15 years old, like kids who watch that aren't watching this, but I am.
I don't know.
I have another gripe that's maybe not as hugely related to Knuckles, but this was the most frustrating part of watching this show. Paramount Plus's app. I don't know if it's as bad for you guys as it is for me.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It has to be the worst app I've ever used. I would put it on my TV and particularly in the last episode, it was fine, but it was like every 2 minutes it would crash and I'd have to like reset my TV. And I was like, and then I was like, well, I'm just not going to finish the show then. But I did. I just watched it on my phone.
Missed the post-credit scene though.
Well, that's why I didn't watch it, because I was so annoyed at that point. I was like, okay, it's over. Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their UI for me is just like, it's so slow and unresponsive that it feels like I'm like, we're in 2024. Like, I go on Apple TV Plus or Disney Plus or Netflix, like, and it you scroll through, things glide, and like, I know this isn't about Knuckles itself, but like actually getting on to watch anything on that service is just, it's rough.
It does this thing as well. I don't know if it did for you, but like, you know, on streaming services, it'll do a preview sometimes if you scroll and then you hover over something. But if you go on this and go into the episodes, it'll do the preview. And if you scroll down to the episodes, the preview will still go. Like, it'll just keep going and there's no way to pause it. So I'm getting a preview of an episode that I'm already planning on watching. Like, I just want to watch the episode. Like, why are we doing this right now? Yeah, it's a terrible app. It's really not good.
Glad that it's universal for everyone.
Yeah.
I did really like that when I finished the, you know, when you finish something on Netflix or Paramount Plus or whatever, and it recommends the next thing, it recommended What a Woman Wants featuring Mel Gibson. It's like I think an R-rated rom-com from like the late 90s.
Why did it recommend that?
Yikes.
I don't know.
God.
But here we are.
One question I did have for you, Clank, because you're the resident Sonic expert.
Sure. Yeah, bring it. Want to talk Chief Pachacamac? We can talk about Chief Pachacamac if you want.
We can get to that in a second. But one question I had, are the Flames of Disaster a thing in the game?
No. Never heard of it in my life.
Okay, great. Because I was like,
there was, what I will say is in that episode, the musical episode, during this rock sequence, maybe this is why I liked it, this was some of the most like Sonic stuff that was in the entire series. Like, they get into the demon in there, looks straight like pulled straight out of a Sonic game, like some of the backstory stuff with the owls and the last of the Echidna tribe and stuff like that. Like, I thought that was done very well. These people obviously know their stuff. Like, there is some love towards the franchise there. The Flames of Desire, not Flames of Desire.
Disaster.
Is it Flames of Desire? Disaster. Flames of Desire is what Knuckles would use to woo a mate or something. Flames of Disaster. I've never heard it. Might be from, I'm not super deep on the like Sonic comic books or the anime, I know a little bit about, but it might be from there, but I don't know from the games.
One thing you did bring up that it just flashed into my mind with that sequence, because they don't have a budget, they make it as if it's like a stage play or something, which like in concept I think is a good idea. Like, I think they can make that work, and like I think some of the designs, because it's from the games, like works. There is one moment because they show his backstory and Knuckles' dad's there, and he looks exactly like Knuckles. There's a bit where like it's Knuckles' dad, but then he turns into like a puppet for like half a second for some reason, and then they flash back and he's just a regular person again. for me, like, if they were going to go, like, as hard as they wanted to with, like, a play sort of thing, they should have just done a whole puppet show. Like, I think that maybe that would have made me a bit more,
like, that Community episode. Yeah, like, where it's exactly. Like, we're going to lean into this style and make the whole thing like this. But we're cutting back and forth. We're jousting on bicycles. We're just doing... I don't know.
I just think it's embarrassing that it's like Adam Pally in like a Knuckles one scene, and it just looks terrible. And not to keep going on with the fact that this is, you know, a Wade Whipple show at the end of the day, like, but it is called Knuckles. And there are shows that like Avatar the Last Airbender, for example, there are episodes where they just, you know, they go away from the main cast and focus on something else. And it's great. Like, I love, like, the Zuko episodes of that show. And, like, and I feel like you could do something like that. And, like, I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily to be like, okay, for one episode or something, we're going to just focus on something else. But I just don't think the show earned it. Because Wade's a terrible character. But I think, like, there's just nothing else. Like, I think if that's your whole show, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a mess. I watched, like, I will say, like, I don't know. I don't regret watching it, especially as a Sonic fan. However, like, I haven't seen, like, Sonic Prime, that animated series, and that's supposed to be great. Like, this is 3 hours that I could have spent doing that or doing something else or playing a Sonic game. Like, I just, this to me, if you removed Knuckles from it entirely, it doesn't change a lot. Like, there's, sure, you lose this weird robot battle at the end that felt bizarre, and that's when the robot showed up, I'm like, oh, like, Jim Carrey's gonna be there and it'll be Eggman, but it's not. It's the buyer. I thought the villains were so just bad. Sorry, Kid Cudi. Like, I'm just, there's that first fight in the bowling alley with them is like is not a lot of fun. But I'm disappointed because I thought Sonic 2 was good, and now I'm worried about Sonic 3, although Keanu's in his shadow, so it has to be great, but it's just like, we deserve better, especially now. Like Lauren said, you said you're watching Arcane. We did, like, that's the bar is no longer Angelina Jolie's Tomb Raider movie. Like, it is, the bar has been raised so much higher now.
I mean, we just watched Fallout last week.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Which is a funny show. Like, you can do this. You can do this silly thing if you want to. Yeah. We're not just asking for these gritty, dark Last of Us things. It's, yeah, a bit of a mess.
I feel like Knuckles is just a product of what Paramount has created with this whole franchise. They were the ones who went in going like, okay, it's going to be, we're making a Sonic movie, but it's going to be part, you know, like human part,
like Looney Tunes back in action style,
that's right,
thing.
And that's what they went with, and this is just another installment of that. It doesn't stray from the path in that sense. And I think if that's what you want more of, Knuckles is probably a really good show for you. Like, it wasn't for us because we just want different things, but they essentially just continued what they had set up. I remember when they announced that there was going to be a Knuckles TV show, and I was actually quite hopeful because I thought he was a really great part of the movie. And he's still the best part of this TV show. It's just that it's not his show. So that's where it really falters.
Tom, anything else?
No.
I have a question for you, and then we can give our 5-star ratings. Will this be better or worse than the Borderlands movie?
For me, there's no way Borderlands is worse than this, because at the very least, Borderlands is doing the video game. Maybe not necessarily to the same standard, but it's like at least not shying away from what like Borderlands inherently is. So like I have to give it like props at least for that. So for me, yeah, I don't see any world where I enjoy Borderlands less than this.
No, I think I agree because, yeah, as a video game adaptation, I don't think this is a good one. Like, interesting idea of doing a new story. But yeah, like you say, as a Sonic fan, you're missing out on all the cool lore that they could have drawn on. Like, in reality, if they wanted to do a really promising Sonic adaptation, it would be an animated movie. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have humans in it, like, because I mean, I haven't played a Sonic game. I assume there aren't humans in the games, but
there's one noticeable one. Yeah,
Sonic may or may not kiss one at one point, but that's
that wasn't the one I was thinking about.
Okay, yeah, there are humans. They're not prominent. They show up every once in a while.
Right. Okay. And whereas this does the opposite. It's like, oh, the Sonic characters show up every once in a while. I can't remember what the rest of my point was, but yeah, I think the Borderlands movie, yeah, I think we're going to enjoy it a little bit more, at least on the cast basis.
Okay, yeah, because when I was watching this, I was like, is this the tone we're going to get in the Borderlands movie, and am I going to be okay with that? So I wanted to ask you.
Have you seen
guys
Eli Roth's movies? I think it's going to be way more adult.
Yeah, well, yeah, I just mean, like, I think it's going to be very silly. Which Borderlands is also very silly. I just hope the jokes land. Like, whereas this, the jokes didn't land whether they were adult or not. Like, you want to say it's a kid show? There was an ejaculation joke during the bedroom scene. Like this, like, I would like to say it's a kid show, but there are things that lead me to believe that maybe that's not the idea they were going for. And if that's the case, that's a huge, you missed. Like, that's a huge bummer. What are we rating this on the 5-star scale that we use here on Controller Club? Anyone feel strongly? Anyone want to go first?
Tom, go on.
I do. I have to give it a 0.5-star. This is
wow.
Like,
wow.
I genuinely, like, I was talking about it with Revan, my friend. Like, I was like, oh, maybe it's 1-star because we did laugh a lot because we were making fun of the show. But I just, there is no, if we didn't do the show, I wouldn't have watched this. Like, or if I did watch it, I would have turned it off after the first episode. There's nothing for me here, unfortunately. And like, it's such a shame that they wasted this because they could have done something a lot cooler. But instead, we got this.
Lauren?
I think I have to give it some credit where it's like, I just don't think it was for me. And yeah, like I've said, that's not a bad thing, but I was not the target audience for this. But I think it is successful in some ways. I do think Knuckles himself is a good character and carries in certain parts of this show. And so for that, I think I'm going to give it like 2 out of 5.
I'm also giving it 2 out of 5. I think that, yeah, there are moments that I am like, okay, I can see what you were trying to do here, but I just don't think that the rest of it is all that great. And I don't know if I'd recommend it, even to a hardcore Sonic fan. What, like, I love this idea from Paramount. They're doing it with Ninja Turtles. Like, we got Mutant Mayhem, and they're, hey, we're going to do a series based on the movie, like, in that universe on the streamer. And I thought when they announced Knuckles, it's a great idea. I loved Sonic 2. Like, I would much rather go and watch Sonic 1 and 2 again than rewatch this. And yeah, I'm just, they're talking about, we have ideas for more seasons. I'm sorry. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think this may be a one and done. I would much rather let's go and do another character or something like that. Like, let's get a Tails show, or let's go do a Shadow show or something. Or just keep making Sonic movies, because I enjoy them. I know Tom doesn't, but
it feels like when Disney was like, hey, we need a bunch of like streaming shows on Star Wars and Marvel and stuff. Yeah. And they just kind of churned it out. It feels like that's what they were doing here for Paramount Plus. It's like, we need a big franchise show on Paramount Plus. Let's just do one on Knuckles. For better or worse.
You can let us know what you thought of the Knuckles series, though, over on Twitter. We are at @controller_club, controllerclubpod on Instagram, and controller.club. on TikTok. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. 5 stars, 5 stars. It really helps out. And send in any questions, topic ideas, or just simple hellos to controllerclubpod@gmail.com. We have decided on our new Game Plus game of the month for May. Starting May 1st, get playing Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. We're going to play through that. And then at the end of the month, we'll do a full deep dive book club discussion on that. Before we go, though, Tom Drew, where can everybody keep up with you and all your, I'm sure you've got all the Knuckles fan art lined up. So where can everybody keep up with that online?
Yeah, if I do decide to do that, Maybe this will convince me. You can find it at Tom Drew Art on Instagram and Twitter. I'm doing this thing where I'm posting a different Justice League member every day for 7 days, and then leading up to a big Justice League fan art piece. We're on day 5 at the moment, so just posted Martian Manhunter. If you're a big fan of the Manhunter, go check it out. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully some more fan art in the pipeline.
Lauren, do you have anything exciting coming up, and where can everybody find that?
You can find me at lrouse19 online. Most recent thing I've done is put out an interview with the Fall Guy director and producer. That I believe actually came out a little earlier in Australia than everywhere else. Is that right? Is it not out for you guys?
Yeah, not yet. Next week.
Okay. I consider this the Sydney Harbour Bridge closure tax, that we get to see it early because they closed down our bridge. So yeah, I had a chat to them, and that's up on Lifehacker. You can go check it out.
Awesome. We were watching Anyone But You this past couple other days, the other day. And
Hollywood movie,
like,
in Sydney.
There's Lauren's. That's Lauren's house. There's Lauren's house. you can keep up with me everywhere. I'm at The Kleinfelt, T-H-E-K-L-E-I-N-F-E-L-T. Have some Knuckles content in the works over there. So look on Twitter. It'll be going up in the next little bit. It might be about the potential future of the Knuckles series and how it doesn't look very good. That's going to wrap up this episode of Controller Club. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get gaming.